So I've been asked to share this meeting. I'm your 10-minute speaker. And then after that, there will be a 10-minute break before the main speaker. Okay, so I am Sammy Jones, and I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, it's funny. I was just asked to do this about, well, maybe half an hour ago. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then somebody said, well, I guess that's better than you don't have time to prepare, which is true. So I don't have time to make up any stories or tell any lies or anything like that. And, you know, I got here in these rooms December 1st, 1978, and by the grace of God, I've never had to leave, and that's a miracle. That is a miracle. I've seen too many people leave and not been able to come back. So, you know, when I was growing up, I came from a very normal family. There was no abnormality in the way I was raised at all, and when I first got here, I remember telling my sponsor, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. Because I don't come from this, these abuse and this stuff that I hear, you know? And, I'm an alcoholic. So my main message really is that you can come from a very normal, loving family and still become an alcoholic. This disease knows no boundaries. It doesn't matter what kind of a family you come from, whether you come from money, whether you come from the slums, black, white, green, purple, it don't matter. It don't matter. It's a disease, and it got me, that's for sure. You know, I had a lot of fun with my drinking for many, 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 many years. I could spend a whole hour just on the fun I had, because I was a party girl. I was not an at-home drinker. I was a dancer, I was a drinker, and I was a, let me see, you guys would call womanizer. I guess I was a manizer. Anyhow, it went with the drinking, okay? It kind of went together. And, you know, but subsequently it got me, like it always does, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it will get you. Trust me. It's just like the slot machines in Vegas. They'll get you eventually if you keep doing it, you know? And I've been in every drunk tank in Orange County. I've been in, a couple in L.A. County. Spent a weekend in a women's home, whatever you call it, whatever, anyhow. But, you know, though it's funny because none of those things ever stopped me from drinking. No matter how bad things got, because alcohol was not a problem. It was my solution to everything. It was my solution to everything. Until the solution didn't work anymore. And that's the way this disease is. We're going to do it till we don't do it. We're going to keep doing it till it bites us in the butt. And then we try to stop and, oh my God, find out we can't. I never thought I couldn't. Just like my smoking, I never thought I couldn't. One day, you know. And eventually when I got into enough trouble and enough pain, it was the pain that brought me here, not the drinking. I didn't even recognize that the drinking had to do with the pain. It probably took me a good 4 or 5 months to put those two things together, you know. So I came here because I wanted the pain to go away. I just wanted it to go away, you know. And I found out that there was something in these rooms. You guys, your pain was gone. You were happy, joyous, and free. You could laugh at things that still really, really hurt me so badly, you know. So I stayed. One meeting after another, I stayed. I did the things you told me to do begrudgingly. Okay, wasn't happy about it in the beginning. It took time. It had to become a habit, just like everything else does, you know. But I am here to say that I'm glad I stayed. Because God has seen fit, you know, to put me in service to help others, and that's what this thing is all about. That's what the whole thing is about. And with that, I'm going to shut up because I forgot to call Ken up here to say the 12 traditions. So I'm going to do that now, and then we're going to take the 10-minute break. So I'm doing it my way. See, nothing much has changed. But I am going to stay because it really does get greater later. Thank you. Ken, come on up here. It's time. I'd like to introduce you guys to a very, very dear friend of mine, actually my adopted daughter, Miss Mandy.
happened.
Okay.
Hey, hey, hey. What's up? My name is Vandy, and I am definitely an alcoholic. So glad to be here. My cheeks are already hurting because I've been smiling so much. And, you know, it's funny because I get to see my home group that I'm with now, my Visalia people, Albert, I mean, everyone. There's a whole bunch of Grasshole, Anthony. There's a whole bunch of them. And then I see my crew I've met in Porterville being CSR, my buddies, and Bob, everyone. And then I see my home group, my friend coming from Bakersfield, and then I'm here and I see my home group who helped me get sober and, you know, called me on my stuff when I just was 20 years old, coming to meetings thinking I didn't have a problem, I just got caught up. So I have a lot of angels in this room. So I grew up in Lemoore, California. I'm a Portuguese born and raised, just like my dad. I'm a Machado. And I had a good childhood. I'm just like Sammy when it comes to the way I was raised. I had a good, my mom and dad were married until my dad passed, 40 years, and they loved each other. They adored each other. I had an older brother, Bobby. I still have him. He's just a pain sometimes. And then there's me. And so we grew up in a really good home. We all kind of knew everyone we grew up with, if we weren't related, because it was a big old Portuguese town. Half my friends were related. But we all grew up together, played sports, went to school together. Junior did the junior dances. I was a little athlete. I wanted to play everything because I had an older brother, so I wanted to be, you know, I had to hang out with my big brother and try to do all the boy things. And, you know, I just had a really good childhood. I went to Medellin when I was a little girl, but then I ended up going to King's Christian. And, you know, it was a good school. I got to see a lot of stuff growing up. I got to go to Washington, D.C. I got to go on all kinds of field trips. I got to go see the Vietnam Memorial, and I got to find my dad's best friend who signed up in the buddy system during Vietnam, and his name was Danny Rose, and he passed within a couple of weeks of being out in Vietnam, and I found his name. I just did all these good things. I got to be really, I have pictures of it all. So my childhood was just a really happy, happy childhood. Never, ever grew up with alcoholism in the home. Yes, my dad worked for Coors Light for many years. He was a salesman, and of course my dad had the man cave, which was the garage where he kept his boats and his toys and a couple refrigerators, and people came over all the time and drank beers. And but my dad was the type, like, he could have a vodka and a squirt, but half the time it would just ice out and still be sitting there. And I remember the first time I really had a beer on my own. I was 7, and I was curious because I'm a nosy ass, and I wanted to know what was so big about these Coors Lights. And so no one was home, so of course I sneak out into Dad's garage, and I get a beer, and I drank half of it, and it was gross. And but I didn't want to get caught, and this is such an alcoholic mind, but I thought, how the hell am I going to get rid of this? Not pour it out, crush it, throw it somewhere else. I better just slam it, and then I'll crush it and throw it in the neighbor's trash. So that's what I did. Never got caught. And then I remember as a kid, a couple of us kids stole some beers, and we got caught with that, and I felt guilty. But it was just curiosity, I thought. The first time I got drunk, I moved up. We were in junior high. I ended up becoming a freshman, and there was a crew of us that went to King's Christian, and we all kind of knew each other. There was a small school, so there was an eighth grader, 3 freshmen, a sophomore, and a senior, and it was SATs week. And I so do not want to see my SATs that day because that was not good. But we ended up not having to be to school till 10 in the morning because of SATs. So our great thinking said, let's get some beer. Our friend can buy. We'll get some beer and some wine coolers and do the girly thing. So we slammed like 3 wine coolers, 2 wine coolers, and a couple beers. Well, that's all it took for us. We weren't big drinkers yet. And we just thought it was so fun. And of course we go to school and get popped. One of my girlfriends fell down the stairs. And she felt guilty and had to tell. And so we got in trouble and there was some consequences, but that was my freshman year. By this, my sophomore year, I was like, yeah, I'm out. I'm going to Lemoor High. And so all five of us left and we went to Lemoor High. And the party started. Typical high school, went to school, did decent, didn't stay in sports like I used to. I wish I would have, but my focus was partying. And so we did the keggers, like most teenagers do, house parties if parents were going to be out of town. I never would do mine because my dad, I had enough. My dad was the best man I know, but he would have been, the guns would have went off. And so you just don't do that. And so, but we did everyone else's. And then we also had the friends' parents that let us drink. And those weren't always the liked parents, but we loved them. And so we partied and partied and partied. And I think the first time I got in trouble, I was still in high school, and I forget about half the time about this, but we were in a Jeep, and it was a few guys and a few girls, and the guys pulled over, and I sat behind the wheel in the Jeep while it was in neutral. The engine was on. We had some open containers, and I really didn't drink that night, but I got in trouble. A cop pulled up on nightly patrol through the neighborhood, just a little more, and so I got, that was my first minor. But I wasn't drinking, so I just thought, just bad timing. So none of that was really anything I took seriously. At the end of my senior year, I broke up with that boyfriend that I had. He kind of hurt my heart. I was still pretty innocent, and he cheated because I wasn't ready to go any farther than just being boyfriend and girlfriend. And he didn't like that, so he cheated and broke my heart, and then I just kind of balls to the wall at that point. I didn't care anymore. I broke up with him. I started partying hard. College was beginning. I was going to be living on my own. You know, that big ego was just pumped up. I got my own car for graduation, a badass 1995 silver Mustang, brand new. And I was, you know, I was living the life. And, or so I thought. I ended up started partying a lot, threw parties, had my own place. Then I started getting into some other stuff, other substances, and I don't know why I liked it so much, but I did. Oh, I guess it's because I'm an addict, but I started in the mornings, my bowls in the morning, I always tell people and they laugh at this, but my bowls in the morning weren't cereal or Lucky Charms, so I was smoking some of that grain every morning I woke up, and it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it was just so normal to me, and it's so crazy because I didn't grow up in that, so I still kind of trip out about that, but it was always, what's going on tonight, what's going on, and in my mind, I thought, I'll end up getting college in. I kept dropping classes. I ended up dropping class without dropping them, so I had like 3 F's, so then I was on like probation with the school, and so I left that school, of course. And I ended up going from West Hills to COS to San Joaquin, and by the time I got to San Joaquin, I was going to school high. And, you know, I still just thought I was partying. I got into a really bad relationship. You know, I had lost my virginity to this boyfriend, and I wasn't even sober. It was the first time I ever did shrooms. So I was shrooming. At first, I couldn't look at him anymore because his eyes kept popping out of his head. And I thought it was so funny, but then they wouldn't stop. And I was like, you're not even looking at me. I can't look at you. And so instead, I quit looking at him, and then we made whoopee. So what does that tell you about me? And I'm a good girl. I wasn't one that screwed around a lot, but everything goes out the window. Everything goes out. And the morals I was raised with, all that. I was on drugs, man, and whatever the excuse was, and I loved him, but it was a very unhealthy love for both of us, and a lot of chaos, and I was never the type to cheat, and I would break up with him all the time and go out with someone else because that was my way. He would get a little physical at times, and I was just like, F you, watch this. And it's just very, very chaotic. I did not grow up with any of that. But I think some of the high of getting away with that was my addiction. It was just the whole lifestyle. And I had even dated one of the biggest dope dealers in Kings County. Had no idea. No idea until, like, later. And then I was like, yeah, where was my head? And so when I started getting in trouble with the law again, I was 18 and I got my first DUI, and I was coming home from my brother's. I had my girlfriend Naomi with me, and we were coming from Tulare, and we were cruising down 10th Avenue, got to Hanford, and this cop pulled me over for speeding, and he could smell. I had a bottle of some Boone's at my brother's, and I wasn't drunk. I mean, I had a little buzz, but I didn't think anything, because, you know, why would I? And so he was really sweet, and I was crying, and I got arrested, and luckily they didn't impound my car. My girlfriend Naomi got to take it, and she was like my best friend, and so that was cool. So I go to this drunk take in Kings County, and I got guys and girls hooting and hollering at me, and oh, the picture of me is horrible. Of course, I'm drunk and I've been bawling, and it's like, it was ugly. And which is good, I'll never get rid of it. I kept that picture. And I remember they took me to this room, and no, of course, I'm the only one, it's like a Wednesday, I'm the only one there in the drunk tank. And then I look at these walls, and there's no toilet, there's a pee hole. And I look at these walls, and there's like pink elephants, like Dumbo. Wow. And I was like cartoon characters, and I was like, I didn't do anything else tonight, did I? I had to think. No, I didn't. And then I thought, okay, whatever. So they gave me a blankie. They don't ever do that, but I was the only one that got arrested that night for drunk driving. And so I just remember by 6 hours later, I got to go. My friend picked me up, and of course, I had a nice joint in the car. It was a lot of stress I just went through, so I smoked that on the way back home. Yeah, I still trip out on it, but I didn't go to court yet, and about 3 weeks later, I didn't tell my parents. About 3 weeks after that, I was at a party, and we were invited by one of my guy friends, and so I had a whole bunch of my girls, typical going out, and I remember going into, it was at a house, and it was college, and I remember going into the garage where there was food, and my girlfriends went in to use the restroom, and some girl came at me sideways, and I guess she was like this bodybuilder champion, but you know, my ego's not going to deal with that, so I clocked her. Well, I did the big, what we used to call the bitch slap, and just because you don't come at me sideways and I don't see you, and my ego was just too big for that. And so the cops came that night, and the reason I mention this too is because a lot of you have heard this story, but some of you haven't. And that night, I got the minor. I took the blame for the beers because the cops came, and I felt like it was my fault the cops came because of the almost fight. And then another kid got arrested. His name was Josh. He was just another little Portuguese. He was hilarious, but he was really drunk, and he threw a softball at the cop car. And so they arrested him, and he had ripped his shirt off, and he's like, call my lawyer. You don't know. You just wait. Well, we all laughed, but like 4 years after that, he was going to Fresno State, and I had finally gotten sober, but he ended up graduating from booze to other alternative substances, and he ended up blowing his head off in front of his fraternity brothers. You know, that's where his disease took him. But I remember I found this out in the beginning of my recovery, the first couple of years, and it was just like, for the grace of God, I understood there go I for the very first time. So back to the minor. I got the minor. And then 3 weeks after that, I had finally told my parents I got a DUI and a minor. Well, no, they found out. It was insurance called them. That's how they found. I didn't go tell them. I'm lying. They found out. My mom called me, and then I admitted it. That's right. They act all like, okay, I screwed up. Nah, they asked me. I was like, all right, yeah, I did it. And so they took the car, and so I was still living, going to school, getting rides, and living with my friends, and I went to the coast. It was January of 97. We went to the coast for the New Year's, just turned from 96 to 97, and I came home, and I was in Hanford at my boyfriend's house, and it was January 3rd. I had been road tripping with my friend. We had a couple beers, and I went to my boyfriend's parents' house, and then later on, I went with my girls again, and I said, I'm going to go get Anthony. Let me use your car to one of my girlfriends. And she's like, okay, go ahead. Just be careful, because you're not supposed to be driving. And I told your mom and dad. And I was like, oh, I'll be right back. So I'm out in the country at one of my friend's house, and I'm heading into Hanford. I'm on 9th and a quarter, and I don't remember the rest after that. I have no memory. This is when my life was almost gone. I ran a stop sign. It had been raining. It was very flooded. and there was a car coming, and it didn't have a stop sign, and it hit me going about 55, 60, the speed limit, and my car completely, not even my car, my friend's car, completely two-door car, little sports car, rolled, flipped, slid, went everywhere, and then came to an abrupt halt by a water well. So, not to go into too hardcore of details, I was cut out of the car. I was jaws alive. My eye, I'm blind in this eye, but it was hanging out, but it was still connected. You could see my brain. My jaw was broke. It was off. Compound fracture arm. Compound fracture leg. This leg was ripped open completely. It was really, really bad. Within, when they got me into the car, into the ambulance time, they had to cut me out. They took me to Hanford, and Hanford had to airlift me because within just that, being at Hanford, they had to give me about, I had already lost like 6 pints of blood. And my cousin called one of the nurses there because my cousin's name is Tara. And they didn't think I was going to make it on the, you know, the helicopter ride. They gave me last rites like, I don't know, 5 times. Some of the nurses had to back up because it was like a gory movie. It was really, really scary. So my parents, they took my parents to Hanford and they took them to the quiet room and they said, she's probably not going to make it. And my mom said, bullshit. You don't tell me anything, like my daughter's not going to make it. You don't know her and you're going to save her. And my dad just crumbled. And they airlifted me to Fresno University Medical Centers. And they ended up, I made it on the air trip. And they ended up doing about, they started off with my brain because I busted it open. I had a lot of stuff in the brain besides my brain. And they had to do about 12 hours worth of surgery on my brain. So within the first few days, well, I ended up being on life support for 17 days. And they also put me into a, not a permanent halo, but a semi-halo because they thought I broke my neck. But my face was so big, it was bigger than a basketball. You couldn't even see my face. Like, it was just really, really bad. And they trached me. I had scar reduction, so you can't really tell. But they had to feed me through my tummy. They had to do, by the end of that first week, they did about 25 hours worth of surgeries. And I still kept making it. So the doctor said, okay, now we're going to go over what the logistics are and what we're going to probably see here. They said, she'll never walk again. She'll probably never open her bad eye and have a hard time with her good eye. Because she hurt this side of her brain. And they said, and she probably will never talk again. So everyone, my mom said again, yeah, bullshit. And I remember even talking in the hospital because I did have a trach and I had my mouth wired to it. And I still talked. And I just covered my trach and I said, what's up? And that's what I did because you make do. I'm too stubborn not to. And, you know, luckily I was brain injured, but it was also kind of a savings grace later because I don't remember the pain and it was really, really bad. So, I mean, I can joke about it and find funnies, but in reality, I'm very serious about it, and I know that God was very merciful on me, and I know that I probably had quite a few angels looking out for me. And thank God I had angels here, my family and my friends that were really there for my family, because I don't remember the pain. It was, my parents were at the hospital. They never left it. They, in fact, the neighbors packed a motorhome. They said, we're not leaving her. And they stayed. I was there for almost 2 months. I was at UMC for a month, and then they took me Fresno community because they weren't merged together yet for another month to do rehab. So I ended up having my mouth wired shut for like 4 months. I was in a wheelchair for like 4 to 6 months, and I made it out of the hospital after 2 months, and then court came. And we were looking at a felon because my wreck was a couple days after the new year. They made that law. Even if you're the only one hurt. And basically, I had a strike. So we got a lawyer. And he said, we're going to start with that one first because you're going to get the most time. And when you go to Superior Court, you're not just a misdemeanor. You have to go through this whole process. And I was in a wheelchair. I was real skinny. You know, I weigh a good 170 now. I was like 115. And I had to get interviewed by this lady. And I was like, I'm not going to remember anything. I mean, I really had short-term memory. Like, I was talking about it earlier. I was kind of like Drew Barrymore, 50 First Dates. Every time I woke up, what happened? Where am I? What's going on? And I didn't know anything. But the difference was my brain did begin to heal. It just took a couple years. And I have a few home group people here who will tell you it did take a couple years. But, I ended up being, I'm blind in this. I have no peripheral vision out of my good eye. So I'm legally blind. But I have a good nose. I make do. But I ended up breaking up everything in me, and then when I had to go to court and go to all these pretrials, it was looking like I was going to see 16 months in Chowchilla because a lady made a recommendation. And we did have an opportunity to boot the first judge, and I'm not going to say names because this is recorded, but we knew if we kept the first judge, I would have been going to Chowchilla. And so I got a different judge. I was lucky with that. And this judge, I had no connections, no money ties, nothing handed over. But I had a DA that stood up for me, and I had a really good lawyer. My lawyer was nervous, and he's a very well-known lawyer. And he was nervous, and he didn't BS my family. But they ended up, instead of going to jail, I got county, and I got to go on house arrest. And I got 5 years of probation, formal. I had to do like 200 hours of community service. I had to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of fines because I owed it. And I couldn't leave the house for 6 months. And then I also had to go to AA. My introduction to AA, never been to a meeting before, just saw clips on TV on comedies. Didn't really know it even existed. And so life was starting to change. And after that, it did. And I eventually was on house arrest. I started going to counseling. I was back into therapy, getting my body back. And within a year, year and a half, I said, I want to go back to school. I want to try this. I don't care if they say I can't do it. I want to try it. I'm luckily stubborn. And so not that it's always good, but I fought to go back to school. And so I went back to school and I was going to AA, but I still was just going because, I was supposed to, not because I had a problem. I didn't have a problem. I just was young and made bad decisions. But back in college, eventually, within that first semester, not the second, the first, I got back around some old places and some old faces. And I didn't have a program. And before you know it, I'm picking back up. And it wasn't on the booze. It was on some other stuff. And my parents found out, so then I said, well, maybe I have a problem with marijuana. So there's this cute little innocent girl next door. Sammy was her sponsor, and she had this little Minnie Mouse voice. Her name was Sharon B. And I thought, she looks innocent, but I've heard her story. Maybe she can help me. So I asked her to be my sponsor, and so I started to work the steps. I thought, okay, maybe I, that was dumb. I could have seizures when I'm doing this. So I started to do the steps, but I never got past three. I guess I wasn't really desperate enough or serious enough. And eventually I did pick up on the alcohol, and then I got mad at AA because I thought them punks set me up. Because I ended up picking up right where I left off. I started blacking out immediately. I almost got in a few fist fights like I used to. I mean, it was just all back and fast, exactly what AA said. Because I did hear what everyone said at the meetings. So about 6 months after that, which makes it about 2.5 years after my wreck, I realized I got a problem because I got homicidal and suicidal and everything you guys talked about. And so I called Sharon and I was like, oh, I got to tell you something. She's like, okay. And I was like, I'm an alcoholic. I've been drinking and I don't know what to do. And she goes, finally. And I go, what? She goes, honey, you think I didn't know? She goes, I've done that, and I know I've been around a little while, I know. She goes, are you serious? She goes, because if you're serious, we can do this. And so what I did is I got desperate, but this time I stayed desperate. Not because I was like, oh, I'm going to stay desperate, but I really just didn't think I could do it. I really couldn't. I tried. I tested myself when I was picking back up. I remember one night I had 2 beers. I heard them talk about it in meetings. So I did that, and then the next night I was blacked out. And it was just everything that you guys said was that and more. And so I really didn't think I could do it, but I did everything she said. And mind you, my grandfather on my mom's side was sick, and I've been taking care of him. He was a strong man. but he got gangrene, and I ended up being with him when he passed away, but I stayed sober through it all. So by the time he passed away, I was like 4 months sober, and if I couldn't be here, I would talk to Sharon on the phone for on the weekends, like a couple hours at a time, and do my step work. She said, go to 90 meetings, 90 days. If you miss one tomorrow, go to two the next day. And mind you, I don't drive. I haven't drove in 20 years. And I did it because I figured if I could go get those fixes for all the different stuff I did, then I can do this. I made it happen back then. Why can't I make it happen now? And I would hear them talk about that too. And so before you know it, it's almost a year. And I was so excited because my 1 year is coming up that I celebrated it a month early with my sister Diane back there because I thought it was my birthday. I blame it on the brain trauma. I would go, it's brain, it's train trauma. But I just got excited. But it was still worthy. I was the baby for a long, long time. And I cried for a long, long time. And my girls, Sammy, Kat, Bear, the guys, Bear, Jimmy, Diane, Debbie, they all loved me through it. And I had a ways to go. I mean, I had not just getting sober and believing myself, but still gaining my brain back, still gaining my memory. And I finally started to have a little faith that maybe I'm going to be able to do this. And I ended up going back to college, and I ended up not just getting my AA, I ended up getting my BA, and I not only graduated with decent grades, I'm not an honor student, I never have been, ever. I just ride by the seat. I graduated with a 3.9, cum laude, whatever that honor thing is, and I had the gold tassels, and it was beautiful, and I was going to the women's retreats every time we had them, and they're so wonderful, and I used to think, oh, they're going to be all beautiful. We're still just a bunch of girls telling dirty jokes, having a good time, laughing our asses off, and having more. I have so many pictures, the best memories, you know. And then about 7 years into my recovery, my dad started getting sick, and I had gotten married. I'd met my husband through my grandfather because he was his therapist, and I took care of my papa. So we ended up getting married about 4 years after I had met him. And then his dad got sick with pancreatic cancer and was dead in 32 days. And we took care of him. My dad got sick 2 years later, figured out it's lung cancer, beat the lung cancer, but then dropped dead of an embolism. It's a reaction of lung cancer. And I was, by the time he died, I was 9 years sober. And I remember holding my mom up because she finally cracked a little. My mom's like, everyone who knows my mom, her name, we call her Weezer. And they even, the day before my dad's funeral, my home group Wednesday night, Rule 62, some of the craziest meetings, but it was my home. And they had a special night to let her be at that meeting that night because she just needed it. Even though she was a normie, it brought comfort to her. And then they all showed up that couldn't make it. They were at the meeting, but then half of them showed up the next day. Diane showed up over at my dad's funeral, and those were the gifts. But as time passed, I started to get really mad and really doubtful and very scared because I thought, does God really exist? And it wasn't just mad, but then I really thought, maybe he really doesn't exist. I just went through these, I was seeing things in my head that weren't healthy, and one morning I woke up and I was pissed I woke up. And then within 10 minutes I had an appointment set with a counselor because I thought, I have no right to even think that. I have no right to even go there. And I started going to two meetings a day like a newcomer, even though I hadn't picked up. And it wasn't even about wanting to pick up, it was about wanting to wake up. And I did what the old timers taught me. You do the next indicated things, you bring it back down to the basics, and you do what you got to do, and you reach out. You don't seclude yourself. So I did that, even though it was another road of trudging. It was trudging, trudging, trudging. But I made it through there, and I got through it, and I'm still miss my dad like crazy. Everyone knows my dad was my number one love and my first love. But I have so much gratitude that I had the dad that I had. And I've been able to rely on my program, and I've gone through a divorce, finally. And I'm with someone else now, and now, as you guys know, I've been holding my tummy. I'm almost 4.5 months pregnant at 41 years old, but it's finally happening. So we may have to save a seat, but I'm okay. As long as I got God with me and my brothers and sisters, I'm going to be okay. And, you know, I'm just really, truly, truly, truly grateful, and I feel very, very blessed and fortunate. So thank you.